Blog Talk Radio.
You're tuned into In5D Radio, the next dimension in radio, where we bring you the hottest in-depth spiritual, metaphysical, esoteric conversations and news with your hosts, Greg Prescott and Kendra Gilbert. Get ready for spirit, body, and mind to expand in 3, 2.
Namaste, everyone, and welcome to N5D Radio, coming to you. Wow, I've got a nasty echo going on here, but coming to you from the 99% Quartz Crystal Sands of Sarasota, Florida, every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, and 12 a.m. midnight in the UK. I'm your host, Greg Prescott from N5D.com, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to be raising the vibration of the planet, galaxy, and universe. Tonight, astrologer Jim Delacoli, also known as Panther Jim 1995 on YouTube, will be returning as our guest, and he'll be taking your calls, but we would like to request that you keep your calls focused on astrology questions instead of personal horoscopes so we can make this a learning experience for all of us. And next week, Jordan Maxwell will be returning, so check that out as well. Without further ado, I'd like everyone to give a warm N5D welcome to my new co-host coming to you from Ocala, Florida, licensed massage therapist, energy worker, and artist, Kendra Gilbert. How are you doing tonight, Kendra?
Doing good, Greg. How are you?
I am just peachy, whatever that means. Apparently, I feel like a non-GMO piece of produce soaking in the warm Florida sunshine. So I guess that's a good thing. What's going on in the news, Kendra?
Well, it looks like Mr. Red is officially on the menu, thanks to the help of the U.S. government approving horse slaughterhouses to produce meat for human consumption. And the question is, how are they getting away with this? And that's basically because a ban that kept horses protected against slaughtering here in the U.S. expired in 2011. And Obama, notorious for saying one thing and doing another, did absolutely nothing. Yet he claims he wants the Congress to ban horse meat slaughterhouses in the USA, but much like his deep concern over GMOs ending up only leading him to signing off on the Monsanto Protection Act just recently, the door is now wide open for the slaughtering to commence. The horses are slaughtered here, then the meat is shipped to Mexico, where it's actually legal for human consumption. It's relabeled and then shipped back to the U.S. as a low-cost meat filler, and thus ends up being your next burger. So just keep in mind also that the horses, when they're slaughtered, are often sick, ill, or injured, and severely stressed out, causing even more of a problem. And in other news, paranoia seems to be the emotional trigger of choice by our dear friends over at the NSA as they continue to claim their right to unconstitutionally and unlawfully monitor our phone calls and other electronic communications by hiding behind what they call an oversight of public monitoring due to their foreign surveillance efforts to protect national security. I think it's really important, more so now than ever, to remind the American public that if it's not supported by our Constitution, it is not legal, no matter what agency or governing body claims otherwise. Pelosi and Obama are supporting this constitutional breach by simply stating that there needs to be a balance between privacy and national security. Translated, that basically means that your privacy doesn't matter anymore, and we better just get used to the idea. Greg, I know you were talking about the new Firefox add-on that's being used to determine if a website's being monitored. What did you end up finding out about that?
That they're all a bunch of jackasses. You know, if they have nothing better to do than to monitor a spiritual website, then you know that's their issue. You know, that being said, I hope they learn something.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so just a reminder, N5D.com will be hosting our first annual Return to Atlantis Conference here in Sarasota, Florida, on the 99% Quartz Crystal Sands of Lido Key Beach on the weekend of October 4th through the 6th, 2013. We have 6 amazing speakers lined up, including Lisa Renee, Teal Scott, Laura Eisenhower, Dr. Dream, astrologer Tom Capaccio-Lesher, and galactic historian Andrew Bartzis, who has the rare ability to read universal and individual Akashic records. Included in this amazing event is a Friday night new moon beach goal activation, a Saturday night cosmic reunion party, and on Sunday night, we're all going to meet at the Siesta Key Drum Circle. Our speakers will be featured from late morning until mid-afternoon, so that'll leave everyone plenty of time to go sightseeing or simply enjoy the 99% quartz crystal sands here on Sarasota's Gulf Shores. Now, due to seating limitations, there are only 90 tickets available to this event. You can find out more info about the Return to Atlantis conference by visiting www.n5devents or click the link below this video. Okay, so moving on, do you really know what's in your fast food? I'll be releasing this article tonight at midnight on bodymindsoulspirit.com, but I'll give you a preview right now. Did you ever wonder why a fast food hamburger doesn't taste like the ground beef that you buy in a grocery store? Well, according to a study published in the Annals of Diagnostic Pathology, beef is not the main ingredient. Additionally, the French fries you're eating should only contain potatoes and oil, but according to McDonald's website, there are 17 ingredients in their fries. And if you're washing down your genetically modified meal with anything that contains ice, then there's a good chance you're drinking water that has more bacteria in it than the toilet water that was sampled at the same fast food restaurants. Now, there's some food for thought. I'll leave a link to this article below. So, Kendra, when was the last time that you ate fast food?
Well, it doesn't happen very often, Greg, but I mean, I'd be lying if I said, you know, I've never been a victim of time and circumstance. I mean, there's always plenty of times when eating fast food just seems to make a lot of sense. It's a quick fix. But when we do eat out, we look for a restaurant like a Chipotle or a restaurant that at least shows some type of concern or has made somewhat of an effort to steer clear of GMOs and especially horse meat. Mm-hmm. But eating at the King or the Golden Arches, I'd have to be more than desperate. I'd have to maybe be even near death, perhaps.
I agree. Yeah. You know what? I see Jim isn't here yet, but I see Andrew is. We're going to bring Andrew on and see what he's got going on. Hey, Andrew.
How are you doing? Yeah,
how
great.
Are you?
Good. Actually, there's a couple of reasons I'm calling. One, when Jim gets on, I want to debate with him the whole hollow earth theory, because last time he was on, he said he does not subscribe to that theory. But right in front of me, I have David Icke's masterpiece tome, The Biggest Secret, and there is a section in which he supports and gives strong evidence for the fact that the earth is hollow. So if it's okay with you, I'd like to debate Jim on that subject.
Okay, well, we're probably not going to be taking calls until about 7:45 or so. So,
all right,
we can bring you on then.
Okay, but other than that, Greg, when last time Jim was on, I brought up the fact that I was trying to get a MIG meditation going on July 4th, and you said you would write an article about that. I don't know if maybe I'm looking in the wrong place, but did you forget to write an article about that meditation?
I certainly did, but I'll tell you what. I'll do that tonight after the show, and I'll get it out by tomorrow. How's that sound?
Great. It's okay, because Jim said that July 4th, I think he said the moon is in Gemini, so there's going to be a lot of communication going. So even though you didn't do it until now, it shouldn't be a problem because of astrology. The communication should spread, and that should help get the word out. So don't worry about it. You didn't goof. Everything's going to work out nicely.
That sounds good, man. But yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, I see Jim is here right now.
Oh,
so we're going to bring
okay.
him in, and I'll put you on hold, and we'll talk to you then, all right?
All right, thanks.
All right, brother, talk to you then. Bye.
Talk to you then, bye.
All right, Kendra, would you like to bring Jim in?
Sure. Would that be that 704 number there?
Uh-huh.
All righty. All right. Well, our guest tonight, of course, we said is Jim Delacole, also known as Panther Jim 1995 on YouTube. Jim started his 12-year journey into astrology in 2001 after receiving a natal chart reading, which turned him from skeptic to researcher and now into a well-seasoned full-service astrologer. You can find Jim on his website, ypi2012.com. Welcome back to N5D Radio, Jim. It's wonderful to have you with us.
Thank you. It's good to be back, Kendra, and welcome to yourself. I'm glad you're on. It'll be a fun night, I hope.
Us too. We've already had a few little fun events happen to us.
Oh, good. And I missed them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How you doing,
Greg? It'll be. I'm doing great, Jim. It'll be replayed on YouTube video, but Well, welcome back once again. We love having you here, and I find you absolutely fascinating. We have a new moon in Cancer coming up, so before we get to that, maybe you can tell us a little about yourself.
Okay. I am, Kendra did a pretty good job of introducing me as far as the astrological side of my life goes. Now I really, the more I live and the more I experience, the more I realize that we're energetic beings and we're being influenced by planets and being influenced by energies. And I'm really like opening to that. So the unseen or the non-physical is really becoming a bigger part of my life, and I'm venturing more and more into that, and I'm realizing that that's where we need to experience and we need to find who it is we are and what it is we are. So as I'm growing here exponentially in my life in my mid-40s, I'm actually enjoying this process. So,
Well, you know, we have, like I was saying, we have a new moon in Cancer. Can you summarize what that means?
Yeah, new moon in Cancer. Cancer is the sign moon rules, and when we experience the sun and moon both visiting there at the same time, the energies of the planets are together, and it's really a time for us to experience our past that we can recognize the easiest. So when the moon and sun are together, we want to really dig deep, feel our way through that time period, and open to the possibilities of experiencing today what will really remind us of what has gone on, what we've done, and also remind us of our gifts so we can help grab those and move forward. So I really love the time when the new moon's in Cancer for us to experience things from the past, to awaken to them, and then open to a clearer future where we're using all of our faculties.
Jim, I have a question for you. Do you feel that it's possible that we could potentially miss the boat and humanity is just going to continue spiraling toward a self-destruction, you know, or do you feel that there's going to be some sort of protection, whether it's in place right now by our own higher consciousness or a higher consciousness that's looking over humanity that will keep us from going down too far?
Yeah, I do think that just like in life itself, I believe we all agree to contracts before we get here of what our life can be like, but I think we have choices at every sector of life. So I think we're at one of those in humanity where it's a 26,000-year cycle that we have the opportunity to open and change things for the next 26,000 years to where we can truly all become our potential, work from within, and everybody has the opportunity. But if we have that opportunity, what astrology and what life itself has taught me, we also have the other end of that spectrum where we can be limited tremendously to where you can almost become enslaved for somebody else's agenda. And I think we're at that doorstep, and that's why I've been adamant with my message is you've got to awaken from within because you have your power, you have your knowledge, and you have everything you need. It's just a matter of awakening to that.
You know, some people believe that we go through like 12,000-year cycles of masculine and feminine energy. Do you subscribe to that theory?
I do, and it's one of the issues I have with that is it's not like 12,000 consecutive of the masculine or 12,000 consecutive of the feminine, but I do think it's a slow process in that, and at times the masculine will win out during a feminine 12,000-year run, but I do think in the end that is exactly what happens, and we always get off balance then when we get to the very end up until this point where I think we can keep the balance throughout. But throughout history, we've always gotten off balance, and then we've had to swing all the way to the other end of the spectrum. So I think with all the planets that we have, and especially Pluto and Capricorn, that this is a time for us to truly awaken to that which we built on the physical plane and mirror that from within and say, what have we done wrong? What have we done right? And let's really take this and move forward in a way that can be timeless.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Many of us have come to the conclusion that the Bible is like allegorical reference to astrology. And with that idea in mind, Revelation speaks of a time when the ancient serpent or the devil is going to be locked away for 1,000 years and then be released for a short period of time. In astrological terms, do you have any insight as to what that could possibly mean?
A 1,000-year cycle. I there's nothing really in that rhythm, but what I can say is that Pluto's a 248-year transit through the zodiac, and whenever it goes through Capricorn, as it is right now, you experience the realities on the physical plane of just what you've done over that last 248 years as far as the human race is concerned, and we're in that time period. It started in 09, and so now what we're doing is we're at the point where we're really realizing that things can't go on, and so as Pluto gets to the middle degrees of Capricorn where it's at now, we start really making that change. So I'm really looking for the human race to step up here, start realizing that, you know, we have to take some action, and it has to be from ourselves. It has to be a responsible action, and needs to be taken now to really change this.
You know, speaking of Pluto and Capricorn.
Go ahead. Well, I guess you look at that as if we could relay that to the 1,000-year cycle as 4 Pluto transits, if that makes sense.
So it's all cycles within cycles, is what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and keeping on that same track, you know, the whole Pluto and Capricorn thing, Kendra, Jim and I were chatting on YouTube, and Jim, you mentioned that the current energy is ripe for war. Would mm-hmm. that be part of the whole Pluto and Capricorn thing, or is this something different?
No, that's absolutely Pluto and Capricorn. Pluto, in astrology, rules the sign of Scorpio, and Scorpio is our soul, so it's where we have to experience the extremes of death and rebirth, and transformation comes of that. And so that's the planet that we look to when what we tried to hide cannot be hidden any longer, and it emerges, and then that's where explosion or total transformation has to happen, and that includes war. So with Pluto being here, we're looking at what happened to the human race from 1760 to 1777 up to today. Mm-hmm. And we're facing those realities of what we created. Pluto's bringing us now the awareness of, over the long term, what the good and bad we've done, and then what we need to fix here. It also, you know, because we've let things go for 248 years on the bad side, it's also going to try to continue that if we let it. So really is awakening happening in everybody's chart and everybody's soul, and it's to extend the human race in a way that's going to be better for the next generation. That's our opportunity. But there are those on the other side that want to rule. Pluto rules total power. And so we have the forces that are trying to rule everything. They're following this. They're looking at this. And they're really trying to step up and gain control here.
Well, it's no coincidence that right now there's this big uprising going on in Egypt. You know, it follows exactly right to the T of Pluto and Capricorn. Now, there's a time, I believe it's next year, where Pluto retrogrades Capricorn. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's actually retrograde right now, and it's going to do it. It goes for about 6 months. But it's going to retrograde, Greg, and I'm sure you're referring to, in those second set of 10 degrees in Capricorn. And so what happens then is when Pluto gets to 10 degrees, we really start realizing that we've seen and we understand what's going on. And the second 10, you know, that's 0 to 10 degrees. And then from 10 to 20, we start doing something about it. And that's what we're starting to see. We're starting to see the individual rise up because they realize this can't go on and you know, have any semblance of order for our children or our grandchildren. So that's what you're going to really start seeing these next 6 years will be the uprisings. And they're going to be powerful because when you deal with Pluto, death really isn't even a consideration. You know to the core of who you are, this is what needs to be done. So death really isn't even an issue to stop someone, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So do you actually feel that there's going to be one defining event that's just going to catapult everybody, all of humanity, into a global awakening? Is that what you think, or is it going to just continually, you know, just keep adding this, you know, little by little by little until we get to that to that point?
Right. That's a great question. And because we deal with Pluto, it transits each sign about 20 years it takes to transit a sign. So if you can picture 20 years trying to learn something, what when Pluto transits a sign or one of your houses in your natal chart, you learn that lesson to the core of your soul of what Pluto's teaching you about that house and that sign. And that's what we're having to deal with here. Because Capricorn rules the physical plane, And so what we're having to do is realize what we've done to the physical plane as far as us being here on this planet. And so it's way more than one event, but if you start paying attention to the moments when there's an exact square with a planet or an opposition with a planet in Pluto, that those are the moments that it gets deeper and the awakening happens a little more. So picture yourself on a 1,000-mile journey each step, what you would learn in each step of that 1,000-mile journey. And that's what we're dealing with here, because each step or each day we're learning something. It's just a matter of looking and finding it and really getting to the core of what's happening from your perspective, from your soul, to help you find your truth.
Now, do you feel that we incarnate as a certain sign in any particular order? Like, you know, we know that Aries is first, and then the first sign, and then Pisces is last. Is there a correlation between that and our process of spiritual evolution, like looking at the Earth as a school, and that there the different signs are different levels or lessons to be learned?
Absolutely. And we have all these planets that we use as kind of energy helpers to put in our natal chart to help us in whatever house or whatever sign. So it's more than just your sun sign. The older I get and the more I deal with astrology, our moon sign is becoming more and more important because the moon represents your past, the container with which you can hold and access that which you've already worked on. So I'm really looking at the sun, where we're going, our pathway, and the moon, where we've been. I'm looking more and more that I think they're almost equal now. And the key for us then is to say, all right, why did I pick myself as a Cancer moon and a Libra sun? Why did I do that? And then you start digging deep, and I think you find more of your psychological makeup, and you start getting comfortable with who you are and what you attract. And then, you know, the big question is, why are you here, and why do you attract what you attract?
Wonderful. Thank you for that. Now, we have a chat room question from Mikey Hart asking about the significance of the Star of David configuration on July 29th.
Yes. And that's a good question. I looked at that, and we had to put it's going to happen throughout the day because one of the aspecting points will be either the midheaven or the ascendant or the lower heavens, the IC in the chart. So in the morning, we're going to have a run from probably around, I'm talking East Coast time now, probably from 10 to about 12, and then we'll have another run of these aspects. That'll be the IC, the lower heavens, and then around 5 we'll have the midheaven, and at 11:30 we'll have the ascendant throughout that day. And what is going to happen is the elements of water are going to be involved, so we're going to have Cancer, Scorpio, and Pisces, and then we're going to have the elements of fire involved. So it's going to be Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius. And when I say they're involved, they're all going to host a planet or a critical point in the chart or a node. And so we're going to be experiencing all of those energies combined. And as you know, fire and water do not get along well. And so what we're going to be dealing with is emotional and then, very aggressive or feeling like we need to take action. And so I'm looking at that time as I pulled the charts for that day and I ran it throughout the day. It's going to be, I think the spirit's going to really come alive. So I think you're going to find, we'll be building to that point from today on. But I think you'll find at that point we'll really know that there's no turning back by the 29th of July into whatever it is we lead to. And if it's that world war, I think it will be by that point. I think that it'll all be, you know, you'll know that there's no turning back. It's going to happen, and then we got to figure out what we can do with what's going to happen.
So there's no turning back, but we're ultimately in control of what we choose.
Absolutely, and we always are. And you know, let's say that the powers to be in the countries decide war. We can say, all right, what are we going to do from our perspective? And then we got to start building our energetic field, our surroundings, and we got to make them. It'll be like life lived at its like most purest from its most purest perspective, and that's what we're going to get, and that's going to be our opportunity to really, with something that matters, we're going to just deal with it, and we're going to deal with it in a way that it's like, this is what matters to us, and we'll know it. It'll be defining, if that makes sense. And instead of so, you know, where we're so politically correct now, and I have no problems with considering other groups or other ideas and beliefs, but it's almost a point where we're rendered helpless with a lot of in a lot of areas of life because we're trying to consider too much, and we've lost the ability just to live life with just capital letters, you know, and just know what we're doing and know why, and know that it's a timeless action that will be right no matter when we do it. We're going to get back to that.
Well, I'm looking on the chat room, and I Want the Treasure was saying, breaking news, Vatican bank director and deputy resign amid scandal. So I'm guessing that's another one of the whole Pluto and Capricorn repercussions.
Yes. Yeah. When Pluto goes in Capricorn, any structure or any system that tried to take control for control purposes only gets revealed. And so that's what we're going to see. We'll see. We're already seeing the money structure and that there's powers that try to run that. Religion is a huge money-making venture, and I'm not against religion at all. I know there's a God, and I know there's something higher that makes a higher power that makes us and that you know, it guides us. But this religious and the religion side of this has been exposed now that there's been a lot of money made, and there's been a lot of control and power misused within that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were mentioning earlier the powers that be. So, in your opinion, will everybody, including the powers that be, go through a spiritual evolution at the same time?
That's going to be up to us. I think the last time Pluto went through Capricorn, we only took it as far as we knew, as far as an individual. Now, because we have access to so much more information, we can take this thing all the way. And yes, I believe that is the potential here. That can happen is that we can now empower ourselves and get the things we need and work from within and have what this life has to offer. So I do believe that's potential. I'm not blinded. I'm not Pollyanna. I do know there's a lot of work that has to be done and a lot of people have to awaken.
Jim, in your video, Wet and Wild Summer Part 1, you made a prediction for the summer. Due to Saturn transcending the water signs, you feel it's possible that the powers that be will introduce a new virus similar to AIDS in an effort to stifle humanity's spiritual growth. Can you explain how you come to this conclusion using astrology?
Yeah, everything's cyclical. And just like throughout our lives, when we're Saturn's a planet I follow more closely than any others because I feel like it teaches us from the physical plane perspective. So there's so many historical events you can look at throughout your life and say, ah, that was going on then. Let me now take where the other planets were and let me move forward. Well, the last time Saturn was in Scorpio was in 83 to 85, and the AIDS virus really, like, exploded to where it got to mainstream, and it was an issue. And so I looked at that, and I said, there's going to be a virus that comes not just because of Pluto being there, but because Scorpio's in Capricorn, and because Uranus is in Aries, and then Neptune is in Pisces. All the outer planets are showing us that we have to end a cycle karmically. We're coming to a period where we've got to realize certain ways of life, and we got to realize certain things that might be ugly and open, and then transform and move forward. So we got to pioneer. And so with the nodes of the eclipses being in Scorpio and with Saturn being in Scorpio, I feel like we have the same energies that some type of virus or some type of illness will come because Scorpio and Pluto rule sexuality and pornography, and that I feel like it's going to be there, but it's going to be something hidden. So we're going to have to really pay attention. And it could be, you know, it might be the bird flu that explodes. I don't know, but I feel like it will be a virus. And it will be something that, like cancer, will eat you from the inside out.
Wonderful.
Well, I'm not trying to be negative. I'm trying to, you know, I think awareness is the biggest thing we all have to have at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does it necessarily have to be something that's a virus or something that's negative?
No. Not at all. I think what it could be is realizing that if you don't truly deal with what matters from within, I think it's going to be this simple to cure or fix this or keep it from, you know, realizing its potential on the negative side. Work from within what matters to you. Deal with that in the present moment. I talk with a lot of people that nowadays are like, you know, just as simplest of things like I need to make sure I lock the doors before I go to bed. Well, they thought about it, or it mattered to them at the moment, but they didn't go tend to it. And they wake up and the doors were unlocked the next morning because they forgot. Well, when you're looking at a soul type matter, deal with it as it comes to you. Start getting in the rhythm. These planets are trying to get you in a rhythm to awaken to the soul awareness and what it needs. And it's trying to tell you, try to get in that energy and go with the planets here as they awaken you to things. And that's really what I'm looking at, what I'm trying to pass to everybody is what matters to you. Start addressing that. Address it in the moment. Don't wait. Quit putting it off, because that's where everything else comes from then. And I think if we start doing that, I think that's going to help us to not have these viruses or illnesses or the loss of energy to where we're tired or worn out. We can keep that from happening if we start dealing in the moment with what matters to us.
So as above, so below, which means that if it happens on a larger scale, it's also likely to happen on a smaller scale to the individual. So maybe within this whole premise, we're looking at, you know, maybe people should just, you know, be a little bit more careful in their doings throughout this time period.
Yes, that's exactly what here's the way I try to explain it to my kids and, you know, to my family and my close friends. With what you're thinking or what you're doing, would that be okay in 20 years from now? Would it be okay in 10 years from now? Would it have been okay 20 years ago? Live with that philosophy, because you're going to go your long way if you can stay within that.
Okay. Now, earlier you mentioned, you touched on the houses in a birth chart. So, you know, for the people that aren't really aware of it, what is the importance of the houses on any given birth chart?
Mm-hmm. Astrology, the more I got into it, the more I realized that it was like the perfect mathematical, chart or map that we could look at to help guide us. There's 12 signs. 12 gets divided easily by 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and then 12 itself. And within that, then you find so many mathematical equations that can help you and help understand what it is to do and how to do things in your life. There's 12 houses in the chart. The first six are where you work within. It's a process of when any event or any time you get something introduced into your energy field that's new, first thing you have to do is figure out what you think about it, what you feel, you know, what's going on inside. And then the process in the chart is you slowly learning from that by, what is this? What's my value in this? You know, how can I understand it better? And that process goes all the way around till you've totally figured out by experiencing it, not only from within, but then giving it to others that are close to you and see how they experience it. And then you take their energies, what they did and saw, and you blend them with yours, and then you come up with an understanding that leaves you better than you could have been by yourself. So astrology mixes and merges yourself with others, and with the natal chart and the houses, each phase, each house is a certain aspect or area of life that you deal with.
Now, Jim, being that we're currently in a retrograde, I have a question about how Virgos and Geminis are they going to be more affected by this, considering that the ruling planet for those two signs is Mercury?
Yeah, definitely. You definitely, if you're a sun sign, you want to know your sun sign's ruling planet, and for the Virgo and Geminis are Mercury rules. So when that's retrograde, it's a little bit more difficult to get the message out that maybe you want to get out, or maybe for you to understand the message somebody else is trying to get out. So you want to take your time, dot your I's, cross your T's, and make sure that you thoroughly understand any communication that you're having with anyone, and vice versa. Make sure they thoroughly understand you. Take your time, slow it down, and make sure that the message gets relayed the way it was intended. And a lot of times you have to go back and redo, and that's perfectly fine. You just got to understand that when you're dealing with any retrograde planet.
So it affects everybody, all the signs, but you are saying that Virgos and Geminis are more susceptible to having that communication issue than other signs.
And then, you know, then we talk about like the moon too. You want to know where your moon sign is. So if you have a Gemini or a Virgo moon, that's going to affect you as well, or maybe your ascendant's Gemini or Virgo. So what you're going to find out is there's so many more people that are affected by that that don't even realize it because they don't understand that their moon was Gemini. You know, they might be a Libra sun, but their moon's in Gemini. So they maybe don't understand that the effect that it's having on them.
It seems very convoluted, but at the same time, once you get it all in your brain and you can actually look at it like an organized, you know, process, it's not as bad. I'm getting an echo now. Now, can you possibly help me understand or explain to the listeners the significance of Ophiuchus and its role in astrology and why it seems to kind of been just left out? Is you know, it's supposed to be a 13th sign, correct? And I'm just wondering, why is it that you never see that in the majority of, like, mainstream astrology and everything? It's, you know, Aries to Pisces, and then Ophiuchus is just kind of left out in the cold.
Right. Well, you know, I think the best way I can explain that is if we could see the Milky Way and understand that it's from the starting point of Aries, 0 degrees, all the way to the ending point of Pisces, 29 degrees, 59 minutes, that's 360 degrees total. And so what the ancients did is they studied the sky. They divided it into 12 sections, and they gave each section 30 degrees. So when they brought up the 13th sign, I'm actually okay with that, but then now you're going to have to change all the other signs because there's only 360 degrees in a circle, and in a complete circle. So, you know, one of the issues I had with it was they define, and we have all the fixed stars that help define each sign and each degree. And they're still there, and they still have that effect, but they tossed this 13th sign in there, Scorpio and Sagittarius, and they said, all right, that's here, and that should have always been there. Well, we always accounted for it as far as fixed stars, and we accounted for it for degrees. So, you know, the energetic field was there. We just didn't make a sign for it. So if they want to change it, I'm fine with that. But now we got to go back and change because astrology is a historical database of events that happen when certain planets cross over into a sign or cross a fixed star or certain planets interact. We've taken, you know, thousands of years of documentation in these events. That's how we're getting more accurate, I feel, as we go. And so if we want to throw a new sign in there, we got to go back and redo all the data that's already been mined and change it to fix the degrees. So I have no problem with that there. The problem is that it mathematically changes everything as we have it configured in the charts now.
You know, we've been trapped in this artificial time since, like, Pope Gregory and King James. You know, and I've wondered about this. You know, we have certain months like February where the Aquarians only have pretty much they're kind of getting gypped out of the total amount of days where you can be in an Aquarius person. How would that affect astrology if we were actually based on a moon calendar, you know, based on a lunar calendar or something along that line? Would that affect astrology and the signs?
It shouldn't affect that at all because we're actually tracking that anyway, and that's why I do my videos on new and full moons because. That's from our perspective, that's the fastest moving of the planets. And so my wish to the beginner and even the expert in astrology is to get in the rhythm of the moon first because that moves so fast, it's fleeting. It's 2.5 days in a sign. So as you swing emotionally, just check where the moon was. Say, wow, I'm really tired today. Check where the moon was. Don't worry about the phase. Check where it was. The next month? Make sure if it happens again, check where the moon was by sign. You're going to start getting in this rhythm and realize that you're doing these same patterns are happening just at different rates. All these planets travel different speeds. And so you're experiencing the cycles. And it's just up to you to figure out, all right, what's going on? What area of my life? By finding the moon when it transits a house or the sun or whatever. As far as the sun transiting, every sign gets 30 days of sun. Each day is 1 degree for the sun. So Aquarius is a little different because it may start January 19th, and then go to February 21st, if that makes sense. So everybody gets 30 days. Each sign gets 30 days of the sun. It does seem like Aquarius gets shorter. I have Aquarius ascendant. I always feel like I'm always getting ripped off, but it does get 30 days. The sun does travel in 30 days.
Okay.
Through Aquarius.
Now, just out of curiosity, if there was an ideal calendar, what would it look like to an astrologer?
Okay. I would do and that's how I do my, like, when I update my website, I update it when the sun hits the sign. So we're looking at anywhere from the 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st, 22nd of each month to the following 18th, 19th, 21st, 22nd of each month. And that's how I do my forecast, or I do my energy, you know, the energies to be dealt with in that following month. So what I would love us to do is to change it, and I wish we could change the first day of the month to be when the sun does hit that sign, because I think it'd be so much better for us all. I think that's why they did these calendars, to get us off, you know, just to get away from it a little more, because I think astrology was getting advanced, and so I think they changed that so the average person, it would just struggle a little bit for the average person to try to figure it out.
Well, and we've talked about this before, that there's all these different kinds of astrology, so I guess everybody would have to be on the same page.
Yeah, and, you know, and I'm not saying that astrology, I do the Placidus Western, and I'm not saying that's the best. I say it's effective for me, but if we could just teach it one way, I think that'd be effective for all of us, because we're all following the planets as they go through the sky from our perspective on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a caller on hold here, Andrew. He spoke with you earlier, the last time we met, and Andrew, are you there? Okay,
yeah,
welcome back to N5D Radio. All right.
Yeah, thanks. And before that, about the article you're going to write, Greg, just the important thing, the meditation is from 5 to 5:10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just need the square root of 1% of the global population to meditate together with the intent of spreading love to suppress evil. That's basically the gist of the meditation. Just wanted to point that out so you don't have to look at the last interview with Jim to get the information.
Okay.
But but other than that, the reason I was calling was because last time Jim was on, Jim, you did hint that you do not subscribe to the hollow earth theory. Well, right in front of me I have David Icke's book, The Biggest Secret, and he provides compelling evidence to suggest that the earth is actually hollow. And so basically I'm calling to have a debate with you. I'm going to have to read off the book here. David Icke writes, "The very spin of the planet Earth creates centrifugal force, which throws matter to the outside very much like a spin dryer, in which the clothes spin around the hole in the center. When the planet was in its molten form, spinning into existence before it cooled, how could it possibly remain solid to the core? It is against all logic and laws of force." He also talks about how if people were actually on the inner part of the crust, which he claims would be about 800 miles thick, they would not fall to the center of the Earth, because gravity would cause them to stay on the surface, on the crust, just like we on the surface stay on the crust because of the crust gravity. He also writes, "The alleged openings at the poles make sense, because the power of centrifugal force in the period of formation would have been far less in those areas. At about 70 to 75 degrees north and south latitude, the Earth starts to curve into the polar openings to the inner Earth. Supporters of this theory suggest it is so gradual that people who claim to have experienced this had no idea they were entering the inner Earth until they began to see land that did not appear on the maps." And he also writes, "These openings are an estimated 1,400 miles across, and around them is a magnetic ring." He also talks about how there are plenty of ancient cultures from China, Tibet, Egypt, India, Europe, the Americas, and Scandinavia, which have legends of the hollow Earth. And he also writes, "The icebergs are made of fresh water, and the hollow Earth theory can discuss that." I mean, there's other things, but just for time's sake, I don't want to read over here. But why do you, Jim, not go along with the hollow Earth theory?
I guess it's less of not going along. As you look at the magnetic field and how it works, I do believe that goes through the Earth. And I do think that matter is forced out as it spins. I do believe that. I feel like the magnetic field keeps that filled, though. And I don't have any data on that. It's just what I, like, as I've meditated and you know, the things I have studied and what I've looked at, it's like that keeps the planet solid. But, you know, I have no data to say that, you know, or nothing to back that with. It's just my own feeling on what, you know, how that works with the planets themselves.
Yeah, and David Icke also writes that that would have to be the case with all the planets, and
yeah.
He talks about how on the stars, so to speak, in the center of all planets, that would have come from when the planet originally formed, it would have been molten, and that star would have formed, but when the Earth and all the planets started spinning, all the material then would have been forced into the outer crust, which would have left an outer shell, in the case of the Earth, about 800 miles thick, and then you go all the way down through empty space down to that star in the center, and I'm assuming all the magma and lava would be stuck within the crust and not in a mantle like we're all led to believe. He basically hints that the mantle does not exist. So what is the key reason you don't see the evidence for that?
I think the magnetic field does that as it runs through North and South Pole. I think the magnetic field keeps that from happening.
I've studied
and read about the moon, and supposedly we had actually shot things off the moon and it vibrated. So they think the moon's the same way, but we don't have any data that says yes or no, absolutely that's true or not true.
Yeah, well, the theory with the moon is a giant artificial satellite,
yes,
and George Kavassalis claims that it used to belong to the Palladians, but then when Earth was conquered by the Draconian Empire, also known as the Reptilians stole the moon from the Pleiadians, and they trashed it. And, I mean, if that's really the case, is it a bad idea? One could make the argument it's a bad idea to do, like, a full moon meditation because the moon is now under the control of evil forces, but I've heard other people say, nah, that's a total misconception. The moon is pure feminine energy, so you can only help yourself if you do a full moon meditation. What's your take on whether or not it's a good idea to do a full moon meditation or not?
I believe that the moon is there. I do believe it is a foreign object that maybe shouldn't be there, but because of our magnetic fields, the Earth pulled it in, and it's our ability to reflect. We brought it in close enough to where we could reflect the sun's light or to try to illuminate the darkness to where we can get back into our past. I do believe it's feminine, and I do believe it's our ability to tap into our past the easiest, so to speak, and to use then that knowledge or that awareness that comes from that to awaken and move forward with it. So I have the moon at the very bottom of my chart, late in Taurus, and the moon is more important to me every day. So as I study that and try to look at it from a different perspective, I really think it does have the feminine energy. I do think it's our ability to recall, feel, understand what was, and then to open ourselves to what can be from that perspective.
Yeah, so the fact that it's under the control of the Draconians is irrelevant, basically.
Well, you know, I don't know how we can prove that at this point. So
that's what George Kavassalis said.
Right. I read a lot about it's a spaceship that got brought in to monitor everything we do, everything we say. So, yeah, I mean, I have read that and have looked at that. But, you know, from my perspective, I don't feel that's correct. So.
All right. Well, thanks for your time, Jim. I very much appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, your work you've done is great. I've read a little bit about all that, and it may end up true in the end. We'll never know. Well, hopefully we know soon.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for calling,
Thank
Andrew.
You. You're
All
welcome.
Right, take care, brother.
Take care. Bye.
Jim, I totally subscribe to the idea that we're not alone in the universe. Do you feel that our astrology only pertains to us here on Earth, and do you feel that other beings might have their own form of astrology, or is this really a human thing?
The way the planets are aligned and the way the understanding that I've come to is the outer planets of Neptune, Pluto, and Uranus bring that energy from the universe that is going to help us here on Earth, or it could hurt us on Earth if we misuse it. Saturn and Jupiter, the next two planets, kind of filter those through, work and then abundance, and then we got the inner planets of Mars, Venus, the Moon, Mercury, and the Sun that then help us realize the physical plane here on Earth. So I do believe there's life out there, and I do believe that we constantly are receiving energy and messages from the universe, and that they're coming through the planets, and that's how we try to decipher that, to figure out what we need to do, as the planets are, I believe, the messengers from the gods or from the heavens. So I subscribe to that, absolutely.
Okay, and that kind of brings me to my next question. So the planets, how do you view them? Are you viewing them as actual entities, beings, or just, you know, what exactly would you describe or define our planets being? Magnetic energy.
Yeah, that's what I would say, magnetic energy. And so what happens to us is if we're magnetically attracted to something, we pull it towards us, whether it's a good or bad thing. It's something we need at that time. If it's something that we've dealt with and we know it's not good for us and we don't want it, we repel that. So we keep that from our energetic field. So I believe we're all just magnetic energy, and we just repel and we draw things to us just venturing through life.
And the planets, do you feel that they have a consciousness of their own?
I think that the planets, they have an energy of their own that helps us with our own soul and our own conscience. I think it's up to us to use what the universe provides us and, you know, come to our understanding, come to our truth, to really figure out what it is we need, what it is we don't need, and to evolve. Because each of us, I think, in the end, I think the agenda is for all of us to become a sun and have our own solar system and provide life to that, or the illumination to that solar system that we end up having, and then where we can create what we've learned. So to become a star, I think, the end.
So each planet has an energy signature, just like each person has one. Does each galaxy and solar system have their own energy signatures?
Yes. I believe that. And so we're all working to get somewhere to help the big picture, to help the whole, you know. So we all need to do our part. We all need to become responsible and accountable. And it's, you know, it's by dealing with what matters, dealing in the moment, and we're in that now.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was wondering about animals, more specifically pets. Let's say that your dog is a Leo. Do animals display similar traits as people when born under a specific sign?
The animals that I know their birthday, yes. So I would say absolutely. And it's interesting to watch them. I have a dog, and it was born in the sign of Leo, and it's just very spirited, you know, very powerful, very, you know, it just tries to do everything. So as I watch that dog, you know, I'm just like, wow, you really portray those energies of a Leo sun, you know. So I do believe animals have that. It's just up to us to figure it out,
mm-hmm.
to watch it, see it evolve, see it work.
That's interesting. I just pulled Leo out of the air, but Kendra, I see we have some chat room questions too. Kendra?
Whoops, sorry about that.
That's all right.
I was muted. Okay. From Sherry Ellis, I hope I'm pronouncing that correct. What does it truly mean to have four or more planets in the eighth house?
Four or more planets.
Anytime you have more than two planets in a house, what the house is going to be significant in the life and the house in that individual's life. The eighth house is of death and rebirth. So when we put a lot of planets in a house, we're going to experience a lot of things that come to fruition, they end, and then something else gets born in that field or in that area of life. So when there's four or more planets, you ask for those energies, and you ask for a lot to go on in that house, because a lot of your lesson in this life is going to be about the soul, its transformation, death and rebirth, and then, you know, the ability to just transform. So whenever we put a lot of planets in a house, you're going to want to really study that house those planets are in, study the sign that's on the cusp of that house, and then the planets that are in there, because you got a lot of life experiences that are going to happen in that area of life.
And from My Key Heart, what is the mystic rectangle and what does it mean?
The mystic rectangle. I've not heard of that term. I would assume it's a trine in astrology where three planets are in three of the, I'm guessing here, I'm not sure, are in the same element. And when we have three planets in trine in the same element, you want to look at, first of all, the element that you're dealing with. Right now we're dealing with water being affected by planets in all three of the water signs. So we're dealing with all these subconscious urges, all of these, all this ability to emerge from within that which we've worked on, that which we know, that which we need to work on. So it's all bubbling up, and then it's amazing the transformation or what can become of the individual if they truly deal with the trine that's going on. So if we would all take our water signs and truly just deal with that, that's why I talked a little bit earlier about dealing with what matters, deal with what comes up from the soul, deal with what you've been trying to hide, open to those things, deal with them, and I think you'll be amazed at the transformation that you'll have. So I'm not sure about the mystic part. I'm not sure if he's talking about the water. So if he can write back in there and clarify that a little bit, I can answer the question better.
Well, actually, there is a little bit of clarification here that might help. It says has to be four planets and four houses.
Okay. That I don't know. Then.
And I guess that would make up the mystic rectangle.
Yeah, the rectangle. I thought you said triangle. I'm sorry. That would be, if it was a mystic rectangle, and maybe I can, I thought you said triangle. I apologize. You did say rectangle. The if you deal with a triangle, there's going to be four squares. And you're going to deal with all the different elements. And so what happens to you is you have a mix of the elements. You'll have a fire, air, water, and earth. And what will happen is you're going to have that mix of planets that you'll be able to deal or understand each element. And so you'll have that nice mix. But on the dark side or the opposite side of that, you'll deal with a lot of difficulties or setbacks or trials in this life. To where you'd have to probably do a little more or work a little harder than most because you asked for that to really understand things from a perspective of I want to make sure I can do it to the core of what the lesson is. And so you'll understand both the negative and positive sides of that. That's a life, if you have a square in your chart like that, that's a life where there's going to be a lot of karma that comes into the life that one deals with. You there?
Yes, I'm actually here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I was muted that time. We have another question in the chat room from Julianne Barbado, and she wants to know, do the planets portend success for a libertarian president candidate, especially considering how disagreement over Snowden has made unlikely bedfellows / blurred party lines brought or scorn on both major parties?
She's asking if there could be an alignment that could bring somebody in the Libertarian Party. Is that what she's asking?
Wow. it's a multi-layered question.
Yeah, it is. It's planets, got about five different viewpoints.
Yeah. She wants to know if the planets, do they dictate any kind of success for a Libertarian president candidate? So I'm guessing that not necessarily Ron Paul this time around,
right,
seeing how he's no longer in it, but maybe somebody
right.
down the road.
I would opportunity. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
There's the opportunity at this time for the individual to come back. So I'm looking at many, many charts, and I'm looking at people with the angular houses. By that I mean Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn. I'm looking at them. If they have heavy planets there, or if those planets fall in a nice way in their natal chart, I'm looking for them to step up now. Now, let's say you're not one of those signs, sun signs. You may have a bunch of planets in one of those signs, or all those signs that really will help you into what I'm talking about. The angular signs are that sign which we need to go. We need to step up. And we need to take action. So I'm looking for the individual to rise up, and I think there's huge opportunity for somebody to come in and start righting this ship. The problem's going to be is I don't think it's going to be any time soon within the next year or two, but we're going to see it gradually happen. And it's going to take a period of time. It's going to take 4, 5, 6 years before that can emerge and really start to show itself. So
well, I think
just
she was
like
kind of
somebody's
referring.
Not going to ride in. Go ahead, Greg.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. Somebody's
That's
not going
okay.
to ride in on a horse. You know, tomorrow and fix it.
Right. I think she was kind of referring then to the 2016 elections to see if there's going to be like a Ron Paul candidate that will arise.
It's a possibility, but that may be a tad too early. I when I'm looking forward to 2015, 2016, 2017, our political system is going to change tremendously. And it may not make it by 2016, but it might be tossed out shortly after, if that makes sense.
Well, hopefully,
because what happens is
you got to prepare
in 2014 for 2015 to happen, you know, and then get into that, and then 2016 to be elected. So I don't know if we have enough time. Please don't take it as a no, but it's going to really have to. This is going to have to ramp up, and I just don't know if these planets want to help that quick. If that makes sense.
So what you're saying is the ball's in motion already, but it's going to take time.
Yes.
Okay.
It's just so slow. But Pluto going through Capricorn is so slow, it's going to be there until 2024. And that doesn't mean everything has to go on until then, but we're going to be dealing with this stuff till then.
Well, ideally, hopefully, we get rid of all the, you know, party, two-party, three-party, whatever system there is, and, you know, we end up having, this is my suggestion, I would love to see, like, a council of elders that represent every race that make their decisions based on the best interests of humanity. Once they stop making those decisions in humanity's best interests, they're fired, and they're held accountable 24-7.
Right. And, you know, that's really what, if you look back to 1776, Pluto got into Capricorn in 1760. It took them 16 years, right, to get to the point where they could do something about it, you know, broke free, and then made the Declaration of Independence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or had the Declaration.
So we have a few more callers here. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring on area code 870. You're on N5D Radio with Jim Delacoli. What's your name?
Tommy. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Tommy.
Hi. This has been a wonderful show so far tonight. The information is fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Do you have a question for
Jim?
Thank
you very much. Yes, I'd like to ask Jim, I've heard that over time the planets have shifted in their position somewhat. I was wondering how it's still matching up with the way the astrologers originally mapped and named the constellations and how that would affect today.
That's a great question, because we have actually shifted as we have ventured through the galaxy. And so the signs are a little bit off, and there's been a lot written about that. What I've done is I've tried to adhere to where they are today in alignment. But I'm telling you, as we go back and I do my charts, I do the Placidus system, and it sets the chart for where the point was the individual was born and what time of year. And I'm still finding that the old house cusp and the old signs are working actually pretty much almost to a T as far as events happening, the awakening happening, and the individual opening to their life. And this has been over, you know, I've read charts for people in their 70s, so it seemed to stay consistent as far as what our perspective and you know, how the alignments was put together from that initial time period. So, but that is a great question, because that is actually what's happened. The signs are a little bit off. The planets are still, you know, where we can still see them in the perspective, but the signs have have moved ahead a little bit. So, but that's a great question. Does she have anything else she wants to ask?
No, that was it, and I really do appreciate that. Thank you very much for that information.
Sure. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Right, thank you, Connie. Bye-bye. Kendra, we have another caller there. Would you like to bring the caller in?
Sure thing, Greg. It looks like area code 702. 702, are you there, 702?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hi, welcome.
Yes.
Welcome to,
hi.
Welcome to N5D Radio. What's your name?
My name is Lori from Las Vegas.
Hi, Lori from Las Vegas. Do you have
hi,
a question?
Lori.
Do you have a question for Jim?
Yes, I do. I've been in a really abusive relationship for the last 20-some years, and I'm really looking to get out of it in the next 5 months, and I was wondering if the planets is going to be in my favor if I make this move at this time.
What's your sun sign?
I was born 2-4-67 at 9:17 p.m. in Evanston, Illinois.
The opportunity to break free for all of us is now, and I don't try to encourage anyone, because I don't want to be tapped in their karma, but we're in a time now where we've awakened, and what we used to put up with, or how we used to see things, or how we used to understand things is changing. We're coming from now our perspective, and so we're opening from within, and we're seeing things, some of us for the first time, as they truly are, versus how we maybe were taught or what we were told they were. So, you know, the planets are behind us all to break free and open to that which is in front of us and to look forward. So I would say you said you were an Aquarian, right? 2-9, you said?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that definitely the opportunity is here for you. You've got two full moons coming which is kind of a rare occurrence. We're going to have two full moons in Aquarius, and they're going to be extremely beneficial to all of us to break free. So hopefully you can take those moons, take action around those times. First one will be the 22nd of July of this year, and the next one will be on the 20th of August. And so if you can, what I like to do is look ahead and then plan on those full moons to take action. So take a step or take some action on those or around those times to move yourself towards freedom, and that would be tremendous for you.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you very much. I appreciate all you guys. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you.
All righty. Okay. Take care now. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay. Just want to remind people that we would like to request that you keep your calls focused on astrology questions instead of personal horoscopes so we can make this a learning experience for all of us. And, you know, speaking of which, I've got some relationship questions, and hopefully this would answer some of the people's questions in that area of life. First one is, what is the importance of having a compatible element or compatible element signs in a relationship, and what can override these elements in a relationship when they're not compatible?
Mm-hmm. And this is where astrology works the best, where you can just at home, you know, it makes sense of it. We have earth, fire, they go together. Air and fire go together. Air helps the fire burn hotter and it helps it ignite. And then we have earth and water, which go together as that's what forms the earth itself. And so if you have elements that work together, so if you're an earth sign and you're with a fire sign, you're going to help each other out. You both are, trying to support or make sure the other one operates in the most efficient manner. If you're earth and water, you're going to do the same. But if you're water and fire, that emotional state may take that passionate state away. And so a lot of people I do charts for, couples, they are different elements as far as sun signs that don't get along. But you got to then go to the rest of the chart. Just because your sun signs don't match, your moon sign might match their sun sign. And then so where you've been and where they're trying to go, they work extremely well. And so that may keep that relationship together. You may have a lot of squares in your chart. And so having that person, they come in and help you with those squares. So you work together and you could do things together that most couldn't or wouldn't do in life. So then you support each other by seeing that, hey, they work. They go that extra mile like I have to. So sometimes that can actually be beneficial. But, in knowing what the aspects are and knowing how to deal with each other, that's a key, and you can really help that moving forward versus having it be a restriction or a difficulty that ends or makes the relationship struggle.
Greg?
Yeah,
did I answer that for
sorry,
you, Greg?
I'm here. Yeah, you did, and I was on mute again. Okay. That's why it's so important for people to call people like Jim up and ask them, about your relationships, because you can find out, even though, like Jim just said, you might not have compatible elements, there might be other aspects within your charts that make it compatible. Now, my daughter, she's a Leo, and I'm a Libra, like you, Jim, mm-hmm. and obviously air and fire, we get along great, and it's a wonderful relationship.
Mm-hmm.
If you're comparing the birth charts of any given relationship, what are the most important things to look at?
I definitely want the sun of an individual. Let's say the male chart, if their sun is in a fire sign, I'm hoping the other person is either a fire or air sign moon, because the moon then is the individual's been. There, the moon is that which we've experienced and we can tap into. The sun's where the man's trying to go. It could work the female sun with then on the other side of the equation, and the male's moon. I'd like those elements to work. I look there first, and then of course Venus is the sensual part of the relationship. The feminine, brings that the rest of the feminine side, and Mars is the masculine side, the aggressive. Side and so then you want those to match. You want the Mars to match the one person's Mars to match the other person's Venus, the person's Venus to match the Mars, and then of course the rest of the planets fall in after that. But if you can get those four to align fairly well, you're going to click with that person automatically. You don't even the looks, yeah, they're going to have something to do with it, but you're just going to like feel like you know that person. And it's amazing how that works. I have not met a person yet to where if you had those four aspects playing fairly well out that you did not get along with that person. I mean, you get along with them really well.
Yeah, speaking of clicking, do people tend to gravitate unknowingly to other people of compatible element signs?
Yes. It is. That is so effective that it would blow your mind. I mean, we could, and I'd really, I'd love to do a study with just random people and then just get them in a room and let them meet and just see how they click and how they don't click. Because we could really prove astrology quickly if we ever did that. Just get a group of like 100 people, and we could get all their charts, and then we just put them in the room and try to match them up to what we thought and just see how they operate. It's very, very effective.
Yeah, I guarantee there's a science behind it. Kendra?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Jim, you know, I've had a lot of, you know, lifelong friendships, two of them really, but I've had this experience happened a couple of times where you've got somebody in your life that is a great friend, one in particular I pretty much grew up with since diapers, and then all of a sudden, just out of the blue, we just stopped communicating altogether. It was just very strange. It was almost like, okay, our contract's over with, and you know, there was nothing bad happened. It's just we just stopped feeling that urge that we did used to have of wanting to be in each other's, you know, lives day every day. It just kind of stopped. Can those types of things be explained or foreseen in a chart?
Yeah, you look at one of your cycles of one of your ruling planets, and it just hits a point where maybe it crosses through one of those north, south, east, west points, one of those angular points where you're ready to go to something else, or maybe they did that. And so if you're truly compatible and you truly get along, that's usually not something that it's like you almost both knew that, and then when the contract, like you said, ended, they just you went on to that next phase. And so I see a lot of that happen. And there's critical I divide everybody up into 7 year. I think a lot of us live 7 year cycles. All of us do. But it's just a matter if it's 0 to 7 or 3 to 10 to 17. But I look at 7 year sections of my life, and I realize that I change, and most of us do that. We change in 7 year periods because Saturn's transit through the zodiac is a little over 29 years. So it's about 7 years that each quadrant gets affected by Saturn and its transit in our charts. So we change every 7 years as that Saturn transit happens. And so that's probably what happened to y'all. You experienced the transit of a planet. Probably Saturn had something to do with it, and it was time to move on. Nothing negative happened. Move on.
I'm sorry. So is that in essence what a soul contract is in your eyes?
Absolutely. And we see those all the time as we watch when certain planets hit critical points in the chart. It's time to experience or move on from the experience. And, you know, it's just a natural process, and it saddens me to see all the struggles that we have by trying to fit into how society says you're supposed to be versus just being who we are.
Oh. Very interesting. Greg?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been told that when we look at our birth charts, we're supposed to break it into thirds, you know, the first third of your life, the second third, and so on. What's the reason behind this?
Because supposedly, and I believe we spiral, and so that's, I think, the philosophy that's out there, that here's the first slice of your life, here's the second slice, and then here's the final slice, or maybe yours is sliced in just two. And so you look at that and you say, all right, here's where I am, and here's what can happen, here's how I can advance, and, you know, here's when opportunities are there or not. And so you kind of just see when things will just, like, just go away. And then you grow up, and then we all have times when we look at our life and say, wow, I was this way, and I totally changed, and everything was different then. And it was a weird event that nobody would really, you know, could look at and say that was an important event or that was something critical. Just something just happened, and you just started to change, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see we have a caller, Kendra. Would you like to bring the next caller in?
Absolutely. Okay, this caller is 601, are you there?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello,
welcome to N5D.
What's your name?
Tara.
Hi, Tara.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Tara.
Do you have a question for Jim?
Yeah, really, what would Venus opposite Pluto, if you have that with another person, what would that call?
Okay. First thing you look at then is you want to define the planets. I'm not sure how versed you are. Pluto's
like,
the soul. I'm sorry.
If I have the Pluto and they have
the Venus
and I'm opposite, what would that call?
Anytime we have opposite planets in individuals' charts, you're going to deal in extremes. And that doesn't necessarily mean negative, but you're going to deal on one end of the spectrum and then the other end of the spectrum. And Venus likes ease. They like beauty. They like things to be fairly smooth and to just work and to be pleasant. Scorpio is looking for total transformation. So it wants to get to the core. It wants to figure things out. It's very intense. And what matters to them is that transformation happens. No matter what has to die or go by the wayside, Pluto and Scorpio are always under that process of transformation, so they're always seeking and trying to figure it out. So those two planets, you have that powerhouse on one end, and then you got the planet of ease and sensuality and beauty on the other end, that you could see where there could be a tremendous battle, but you could also see where you could help each other because of Venus being alluring and because it's opposite of Scorpio, the attraction could be super intense then. So the draw is always there, like the mystery's there. But then the battle will be where Scorpio energy wants to get something done or transform, and the Venus energy wants to have ease and beauty and, you know, they want the peace and calm and have things just try to be as smooth as possible. So that'd be the opposition there. But sometimes opposition, Scorpios love, because it's like it's a challenge, if that makes sense. So the draw is there, definitely.
Yeah, and I'm a Scorpio too, so that explains it. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks for calling, Tara. All right, take care now. There's two full moons in Aquarius coming up. What does that mean?
It's going to be interesting because the fact that Uranus that rules Aquarius is in Aries and it's squaring Pluto. So we got this warring type energy that we're dealing with. And I think these two full moons in Aquarius are going to set us off really and open us to that path, that freedom. That's why I'm looking at this new moon on the 8th, the 29th full moon. I mean, the 29th star of David, and then these two full moons that are going to occur on the 22nd, 21st. This is a break for freedom. This is where people are going to stop just letting the status quo go, and they're going to start really opening up and start asking questions. And people are going to start seeing things from perspectives that are going to be that Uranian or Aquarian energy, and that they're going to come, like you're going to start seeing things, Greg, as an individual outside of how you're looking at them now. So you're going to have opportunities to get some insight into something. And then you'll never see it in that old way again. And so we're all going to be doing that, and we're all going to be like noticing more and more and becoming more aware of our own unique energy field, our own unique perspective. And so we're really going to start figuring this out, and then we're going to start moving forward from a perspective that's going to be, I think it's going to be fun, because people are, they're going to stop just going along, and they're going to say, wait a minute, this isn't right, and it's got to change. And so I think they're really going to start becoming individuals again. And these two full moons are really going to ignite that.
I'm wondering about these changes, too. Do you see anything in the future that might perhaps indicate that we'll go through some kind of metaphysical change on a genetic level?
I really think this July 8th moon is going to start that process, this new moon, because we're going to have we have all the water signs activated. But we're also going to have Pluto opposite this configuration, and we're going to have Mercury there retrograde. So I think, and that's also, Jupiter's actually into Cancer now. So we're going to have four planets in Cancer, and then we're going to have Pluto opposing this, Uranus squaring this. So I think the opportunity is going to be for us to really merge what was, who we were, what we knew, all tap into our gifts. And we're really energetically going to start owning that. And that's why I'm telling everybody, what matters to you? Deal with it in the moment. If something comes to you, address it. You know, start addressing it immediately. Don't just let it fade away, because you're going to forget it. And that's how the moon works. It's fleeting. It's 2.5 days in the sign. So something may come to you one moment and be very important, and then the next moment it's gone. we can't do that right now. We got to open to that which matters. So this new moon, if we just, the key in the new moon is to put your energies out to the universe saying you're ready. And so if we can just do that, just put our energies out to the new moon saying that we're ready, it's time. And we understand that this is a chance to tap into our past, tap into what we were, and tap into what we know, and everything we know as far as before we got here, what we've learned this life, and put all that together and just say, I want to use all my abilities, you know, and let the universe know you're ready to do that. We can take these then two full moons that occur in Aquarius, and we can start really building from our own perspective. It's going to be unique. It's going to be freeing, because that's what Aquarius likes, and we're going to be pioneering something that can be tremendous for us on an individual level. And so I really think this is it. I think this is the energetic change. It's built up. 2012 really, like, heightened it. December 21st did. And now it's like, all right, what are we doing with it? I mean, quit playing around. Let's go. What are we doing with it? And I think we're in that time.
Awesome.
Absolutely. It's wonderful. I don't want to seem like I'm backpedaling here, but I have another question about, charts in general. How much can you actually pinpoint? I mean, from an astrologer's point of view, I mean, are you able to be able to, and I realize too that this might seem to be taboo here, but can you pinpoint even down to when someone might actually be crossing over or passing out of this lifetime?
Yes, and I don't, because then I'm definitely karmically tied to the individual, because you never truly know how somebody's going to handle their time to go. So you don't want them to consume themselves with that last moment or that, you know, that general time frame that things are going to happen. I've definitely had a few people that came in, I didn't know them, and talked about a certain time that had already happened, where death happened, and they actually lost people real close to them. So you do, there are transits, and there's, you know, it usually takes more than one, like energetic, the transiting effect of a planet in a time of crossing or a time of transformation. So you have to have at least three based on what I've studied. And yes, you can definitely do that, but sometimes the death is a way of understanding too. So you want to be careful that, you know, you make sure they know it's a point of transformation. That doesn't mean that they have to physically transform as far as dying.
Now, do you feel that the time of death has any significance like our time of birth does? Is there any particular, is that significant in any way of being able to tell what happens to us when we actually do cross over? Is that time?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think the time of death is just as important as the time of birth, because really the death is a birth, because you just change forms, right? So now you're being birthed into something else. So I really think that that's, and if we'd all take it and understand it that way, you're really just being born into something else. And so it's a transformation time that, you know, you're just like when you came here, I love going to the nursery and look at babies, and just, they just look like, and you just don't know what they're thinking, but you can almost feel, they're like, where am I? What am I doing? How did I get here? And they're just moving around and just trying to figure things out. And I think that's what happens to us all when we pass on, absolutely.
Now, I've heard, and I don't know if you've heard the same, but supposedly we have like this three different ways to leave. Do you subscribe to that theory that we are given three different times to leave this physical existence before we can move on or pass over? Is that something that you heard or...
I did not hear about the specific number three, but we have many times that the opportunity exists. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that when I look at an individual for their time, a time for transformation, there'll be three aspects that are occurring at the same time, where transformation is at the, you know, at the point of the access.
Well, you were talking about, you know, the birth and the death process, and it made me wonder, how does using astrology help people who are planning on having a child?
If all the astrologers truly just would read the chart in its purest form, I think that the way to transform humanity would to be bring the couple in, before the baby's born, you know, get them an understanding of astrology. Let them figure out when they want to have the baby, because I think that's all should all be part of the process. Figure out what would be good with them energetically as a couple. And then go ahead and put the effort forth, have the baby. Hopefully it comes around that time. And then they come back and get the chart read for the moment the child was born and have an understanding of who that beautiful, energetic being that they just introduced into the world and into their lives, who that child really is. And then the key will be put them down that field, put them down that path, give them every opportunity to become all they can be.
Now, do you think that the child, I know I believe this, that before we incarnate here, we choose our parents, and obviously our life experiences and stuff through the time and day and the geographical location that we're born in. Do you believe that we actually choose our parents in all of our life challenges?
I absolutely do, and then for some of us, we almost have to unwind that process to figure it out, but I absolutely believe we choose our parents because they're giving us, they're really helping us learn our lessons, whether it's what not to do or what to do. They're helping us learn them by us seeing them intimately in their lives and just getting an understanding from that perspective. So I absolutely believe we do that.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, do you feel that sometimes, celebrities or other people will actually try to induce labor at a certain time to kind of usher in a certain type of, energy into, and that might sound like a really far out question, but it just seems like sometimes the way that the names that they choose, the, mm-hmm. The fact that, that the birth had to be induced or, it was prolonged, whatever, it just seems kind of strange.
No, I absolutely believe they do. And one of the things that once I got into astrology and really started understanding how important that moment we enter the world is, and that C-sections, when they first became popular, they were all being scheduled in the morning. And so we're having all these morning babies, and I'm like, this can't be good for our evolution if we're missing out on those evening babies, in the numbers or the afternoon babies. And so I was kind of, getting disheartened, but now I see that they're starting to schedule C-sections later in the day. So that makes me feel better that we're still able to have these afternoon babies. And I know we're doing a C-section, but at least we're now, as they're scattered throughout the day again, we need people to have their son in all four quadrants of that chart because we need the heroes and we need the psychics and we need the power and we need some people that are just going to be very responsible. We weren't getting that when we were doing, the C-sections and planning them and doing them at 9 o'clock in the morning and whatever.
Well, what do you feel happens on the other side when something like that happens? It was my understanding that we're on the other side. We pick out our parents. We choose where we want to incarnate when. And then along comes somebody that says, nope, well, we're going to, induce your labor or we're going to do a C-section or what have you. And,
right.
What happens on the other side? Is it total chaos and confusion and people are, or beings are scrambling around trying to, fix it? Or what happens?
Right. Well, I really think that it was part of the agreement of coming in was, all right, we'll be somebody that follows or, gets in the system and works within the system. And I really feel like they did that for about 20 years. And now that's changed. And I don't know why it changed. I don't know why that started to change. But I felt like the agreement was made, all right, we're going to be a part of the system. We're just going to come in and, everything's going to be occur on the physical plane, on a timeline. And so I think the agreement was made initially with those. And it was made, everybody was sitting there and everybody knew it. So, and that's why it was disturbing to me because I'm like, we're missing the people that allow karma or allow fate to play a role, And so that's what started to happen, but we're getting that back now. So that's why I feel like, all right, we're righting the ship here. Because they're being born on the parts of the chart where fate plays a role.
And do you feel also that there's a possibility that we can actually conjure a certain discarnate energy into a body at a certain time? I don't want to get too, sci-fi here, but I'm just curious because it always made sense to me that, if there's a consciousness that exists outside of, you know, our 3D reality here, that there's communication going on. Couldn't it be possible that, you know, the powers that be might say, okay, well, you know, so-and-so, we're going to put these two together. We're going to bring in, you know, this child at this time, and we want this type of, you know, energy within this being. Is that possible, or do you think that's, like, really going crazy out there?
No, I think that's possible, and I actually think that that does occur more than you think, so.
And that's a creepy thought.
that's as evil or creepy as it gets, in my opinion, so.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. In your opinion, when a woman has a miscarriage or a stillbirth, does the child still exist on the other side of the veil?
I absolutely believe that, and that's why I think these abortions, and we're paying for that here with Pluto and Capricorn. I absolutely believe that. And I believe that then it's like, you know, things went wrong. There was an issue. The entity wanted to go back. The energy field wanted to go back, and so it did. And tried to regroup. So, you know, to have these abortions and to make no big deal of it, and or to appear to make no big deal of it, I just think that that's karmically really setting us back. That's why we got to take this time now, and we got to address this, and we've got to open from an individual perspective and start changing this.
Mm-hmm. Now, so, astrologically speaking, what is the difference between a new moon and a full moon? Are there certain aspects that people need to focus on?
Yeah, if you can picture in the sky on a new moon, we see nothing. It's black, and that's where the moon and sun have joined forces. So the moon representing in astrology our past, our ability to tap into what was, the feminine perspective from the psyche, is with the sun, which is the future or the pathway or the masculine energy from the psyche. So when they're together, we want to join forces with the universe. The universe joined them together. We want to join forces, and we want to put out saying, hey, whatever sign the new moon happens, we want to find that in our chart, and in that slice or area of life that's occurring, we want to focus right down into that and say, all right, I'm ready, universe, and this is the area of life I'm focusing on, and we just want to just totally get in the moment and just feel, you know, just feel whatever comes, you write it down. I think you'd be surprised if you do that, what you write down. If you have, like, the understanding of the house that new moon's going to occur in, I think you'll be surprised. I always am when I write them down that I may be thinking all up until the moment that I go to do my wishes or put my energies out in the universe. When I write them down, I'm like, wow, I can't believe I wrote that. I never thought that. It never occurred. But when that new moon came, I felt it, so I wrote it. And then you let the universe have it and let the universe take it and make something of it. You took that moment when the moon and sun were together and you really birthed something. I mean, you picture that together. You're birthing an idea. You're birthing an energy. Then when the moon comes and transits to its full position, being the moon is the past and the sun's our kind of pathway or direction. When you're looking in the sky, as the sun's setting, the moon's rising. So you can clearly see that the moon is as far from the sun from our perspective as it can be. And so if you take action at this time or try to finalize something, you can clearly understand or you'll clearly see whether you're dealing with the moon, your past, or if you are moving forward. Because if something happens and it's repetitive or you've experienced it, you know you're dealing still in the past and that, all right, I need to tweak this. Or maybe there's something here that I'm missing and I can figure it out and I'm going to take action, I'm going to work through it. And then if you take action, you all new is happening, you realize, all right, I'm back on my path, and I'm heading in the direction I need to. So we want to take those phases of the moon because they're two of the more important phases, and we want to start getting in the rhythm of the universe and getting, you know, working with the universe instead of fighting and just trying to work on this timeline we've created here as a race with a clock and 24 hours and, you know, the months. We're going to get into rhythm with the moon, and you start doing that, you'll start seeing your life open, the possibilities happen that you kind of knew were there, but it seemed like you had to fight for it. But when you get in this rhythm, it seems to almost open you to the natural cycles and start getting you to understand that you're different, and you know you got to go by your rhythm, and you got to start paying attention to it.
Greg, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Sorry, I muted myself again. is it better to set your intentions during the new moon or the full moon?
Yes. No, set them on the new, and try to set them right after, because you want that merger or that happening of that exact union to happen, and then set them right after. So it's important to know the time, and I have it on my site, and I do online moons, and I give the time, the date and the time on mine. So it's pretty easy to get. Just set yourself some space around that and start working with it. And then on that full moon, you want to take action, or you want to try to come to some type of completion on whatever it is that's happening in that sign and in that area of life in your chart.
Okay, and the last question I have related to these moons is, what is the importance of, say, of paying attention to the Cancer or the Libra or the Aquarius full moon,
right,
to the different astrological signs? What's the importance of that?
They're going to, because when you do that, one is each sign has a different energetic or magnetic field that, we've come to understand through all our data that's been recorded throughout humankind. And then the other thing is your signs then fall in your natal chart, and each one represents another house. So it's going to be a completely different area of life. And what you're going to start realizing is, as you look at your chart and start understanding yourself, you're going to realize that the springtime that you chose in your life and when things really begin anew is your ascendant sign, so your rising sign. So everybody is going to need to find their rising sign and realize that in their rhythm of the this life cycle, their springtime isn't going to be April 1st or, late March. It's going to be something different most likely. And so the key is going to be to start finding more of who you are energetically in your chart. And one of the big points will be finding your rising sign. When you find that, you'll be able to figure out where the rest of the moons fall, new and full, and start, putting your wishes out or manifesting, and then taking action by that focus of area of life by the house. And then you're going to take yourself and really get in the rhythm, your rhythm of how you've joined forces with the universe and with us on Earth, and really start making a difference from a perspective. It's going to be a heck of a lot easier than probably how you're dealing right now.
Wow, Jim, that was wonderful. All right, well, I might start something with this one. It's going to take us down in a different direction. But do you feel that there are any superior sign? Is there a superior sign, in your opinion?
That's a...
Libra.
Yes, that's right. Right, Greg, it's Libra.
That's right.
Every sign has a positive and a negative, or a light and a dark. And, I look at probably the best or most suited sign for the planet is Capricorn, because that rules the physical plane. But in saying that, you start looking at all the limitations that have happened because of Capricorn and the systems that we built and structures that we built. And how sometimes the ego gets in the way and limits that individual. So really, if I like a mix of a chart where you have each of the elements are addressed, and also that you have, because some signs, some people that have a lot of planets in, like, the late signs of, whether it be Sagittarius, Capricorn, Aquarius, or Pisces, they're ending a lot of stuff this life. So there's not a lot of new that occurs. Some people that have the signs, a lot of the early signs, they're just beginning stuff and they can't see things through. So you want to blend, and you want some power. So, if you got a mix, I think you're best suited for the planet. So, but if you're going to talk to me as a Libra, I love the other air signs. Right, Greg?
Damn right.
Because they work best for us. So, I don't want to be negative to any sign, because I'm sure people will get on me for that. But, I mean, I don't like some signs just because of the fact that I think the ego limits them. And this life for me is being egoless, so it bothers me a little bit.
Well, it's funny. My Pluto is in Virgo, and my mom is a Type A Virgo, and that was my challenge. As the universe, would have it, I didn't learn from that enough. So when I got married the second time, my ex-wife was born on the same day as my mother, Type A personality. So I mean, this is how universe works. It's going to keep throwing these kind of experiences at you until you finally understand what your Pluto in whatever means.
Yes, and that's how Pluto is. It's relentless. So you think you got it, and then it'll throw it right back in your face and say, you're not even close, you know?
Yep.
The fact that I'm a Virgo, Greg, signifies you haven't learned a damn thing yet.
Well, I have Pluto and Virgo too, Kendra, so I battle with that a little bit myself. So.
Oh, great. All right. Well, okay, so we I appreciate the clarification on that. I always wondered if there was a superior sign, so I thank you for answering that question. Now, do you feel that are we all the same age spiritually? You know, you have some people say, oh, you're just such an old soul. You seem to,
right.
You know, I've heard that expression a lot. Is there any truth to that? Do you feel?
I think we're all definitely different spiritually. And I think that we come in, there's chances we have generational influences and that, depending on where the planets fell and when you came in, that there's definitely more opportunities for old souls now than there's been in a long time, because we have a lot of planets transiting the signs that rule the top half of the chart, which is the second phase of life, or, you know, the final phase of life. So from the mid-60s to now, we've progressed from a soul perspective each generation. Now, that doesn't mean each generation is better, because, like I said, we had all these births that happened that were C-sections, so they timed them to not be beneficial to this older soul coming in, if that makes sense. But now that we've got off that this group being born now, mid-90s on, it's off the charts, ridiculously evolved. And it's up to us. That's why it's so important for us to right this ship. That's why there's so much going on with the powers to be, to try to keep us away from awakening from within. Because if we can get this group that's, you know, in their teens and then all the way up to birth now, if we can get them awakened and just give them the opportunity, they're going to really take us somewhere fantastic.
Well, you mentioned that, obviously, because we're in the same age group, mm-hmm. You're also Pluto and Virgo. And
mm-hmm.
It makes me wonder about, you know, I think my daughter is Pluto and Leo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. She's 1994. I'm not sure where it was then.
1994
but,
was probably Pluto and Scorpio.
Scorpio, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, do we all go through the same or similar kind of challenges, or is it more fine-tuned to your astrological natal birth chart?
Yeah, it's going to be the generational energies are for like where Pluto and maybe Uranus and Neptune were at birth, because they move so slow. So there's a lot of people that have Pluto and Virgo mid-60s all the way up to, I think, right around 1970,
mm-hmm.
maybe in 71. And what we're doing is we're trying to perfect the soul, because what we were like the finalizing of the soul and what it's done in its first 124 years from Aries to Virgo, and so we're perfecting it. We want it to be right. We want to do what's right for soul. We really want to analyze and figure it out. And then the group right behind us is Libra, and they're about partnerships and relationships. And so what you saw was divorce took off in the late 70s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Pluto was transiting Libra. And then the sexuality part happened with Pluto going into Scorpio in the mid-80s to mid-90s. And that's also when Saturn transited Scorpio and we got the disease. So you'll see each one of us has a generational effect on each other. And then the group after that, which is the one I started talking about after the Pluto and Scorpio, they're the Pluto and Sagittarius, where they come to change this and build and just expand the soul and its awareness and its understanding. That's what they're going to do. And now we got the Pluto and Capricorns coming, where they're little right now, but they're really going to make a difference, because they're going to build something that's going to withstand time, if that makes sense.
Well, just to get back to the Pluto and Scorpio mm-hmm. with my daughter, and for anybody, I guess that would be late teens through late 20s, I guess, right?
Right, right.
More specifically, what kind of challenges can they expect? And the way I was looking at their birth chart,
mm-hmm.
at least my daughter's, is that this generation will essentially go through the dark night of the soul at a young age.
Yes. Yes. They're having to grow up quick. They're very wise. They can handle a lot more than we probably would have could handle. So they're going to see a lot more as far as death and rebirth. And that just doesn't mean on the physical plane, but just things are going to end, ways of life are going to end, but new ones will come of that. So they're going to see that, and they're going to experience it. So, yeah, they are extremely powerful. And what we got to do is just keep them off drugs, keep them clean, and keep them knowing that they have the power within. That's why my big message is and always will be from here on till I leave, that your power is within. You have all what you need deep within you. Your answers are there. Go get them. You know, God is within you, and it's just a matter of realizing that and not being egotistical. It's just grasping that and then, you know, becoming everything you can with that knowledge. And that group that you're talking about, Pluto and Scorpio, they're really, right now, they're going through a lot because Saturn mm-hmm. and the nodes are there. And so they're really experiencing things.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, Jim, you know, I admire you so much for, you know, being able to regurgitate, I guess, all of this information. I mean, from all of your research and everything, it's just, it blows my mind away. How much, you know, information that we can actually, you know, obtain and how much we can learn from the stars. Mm-hmm. Now, if someone wanted to do what you do, if someone wanted to become an astrologer, what advice would you give to them?
What I would let them know is that don't try to learn it like the education system that's in place right now tries to teach, because as I've gotten into astrology, it was every moment of my waking time I spent looking and figuring and trying to study it. And then I'd get burned out, and so I'd have to put it all away, but it calls me back. And so what I've learned is there's a rhythm also to how we learn things in this life, and you got to get comfortable with that. And so for me and for anybody that takes this subject on, because it is such a vast subject, there's so much to learn, and it seems like the more you know, the less you know. If it's something that's for you and it's something that is going to help you in your evolutionary cycle of expanding, that it'll come to you when you need it, and you got to get in that rhythm. But we've been forced to, like, all right, you're going to take school from August to, you know, June, and then you're going to take time off, then you're going back to school, then you're going to do this. And that's really not how we truly learn. We learn through experience, and we learn through just letting ourselves be guided. And what I've learned in astrology is I learned some of my best work sometimes in a dream, or sometimes daydreaming, driving, or, you know, or sometimes I'm just talking to somebody and they say something that just makes me understand something that I've been working on in a whole new way. So if you're really in a subject and you really want to learn, you've got to let that process happen and unfold from the universe. And if you do, I think you'll get everything you need.
You know, I'd also add, to try out different styles and astrological teachings and see which one resonates with you the most.
That's a great point, because you know, I've seen some great Eastern astrologers and they're spot on, and I don't know how they get there, but they get there, and that's all that matters. And so, you know, yeah, find what works for you. I absolutely, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the importance of retrogrades on a person's natal birth chart? I don't have any, but I know that's kind of rare. None whatsoever. Yeah,
that's rare.
Well,
I don't think
either.
I've ever seen anybody that's done. Well, lucky
you. Don't either,
you.
Do you?
What's that, Kendra?
You don't either. You don't have any either, do you? Or do you?
Are you talking? I'm sorry.
Jim, are you there?
Yeah, I thought you were talking to Kendra.
Jim.
I'm sorry.
Oh no. No. I don't have any. Do you, and
I do have. I do have born, some.
Oh. Okay, so what is the importance of retrogrades?
I think that
on a
natal chart.
Right.
When I see a retrograde, what I look at, the first thing I look at is the individuals. They, the planet working in its effective state where it's going forward from our perspective here on Earth, it was like you missed a few things, so you asked for it to be retrograde so you could kind of slow that energy down and figure it out to its core. So if you don't have any retrograde planets, you're kind of, you're living life and going through it because, you know, you're in a pretty good rhythm with the planets, with the universe, and you know, your perspective and your understanding is everything's in rhythm. Not that you have an easy life, by no means, but as far as the planets go, you're in rhythm with them, and you didn't have to slow one down to kind of redo it or understand it from perspective that you missed in a previous life.
But even so, I mean, the retrogrades would almost be a blessing, too, because it kind of points you in the direction of what you need to work on, correct?
Yes, it definitely does. So from that and that's the way you really need to try to figure out how to look at things. I love that perspective because that's really how I look at it. I'm like, all right, good, I have Saturn retrograde. Let me read more about Saturn. You know, let me take a little more time and understand Saturn and its effect on, you know, the planet and us as we venture through life. So that's absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm. I know that here in the United States we're going to be celebrating Independence Day on July 4th. Do you see anything unusual for that date?
Yeah, I tried to pull up a few charts I hopefully we'd be looking at, and one of them was July 4th. And as I was looking at the Pluto's going to be in Capricorn where it was when we formed this nation, and then it's going to be opposite the sun. So as I'm looking at this, I think where everybody – you're going to see more support from the individual perspective for the 4th of July, and people are going to like try to understand it a little more. And then I think that there's going to be also opportunity for events or something to happen as well to try to change where then this country wants to go, because Pluto's going to be opposite this. So I think there's awakening, and I'm hoping that it's not going to be a on the negative side where something, you know, very bad happens. But with Pluto square Uranus and opposite the sun, we really want to watch this year, and we really want to make sure that we assess all that we've done, all that we're doing, and all that where we're trying to go, because with this opposition of Pluto here, I think we're really paying for the stuff that we're, you know, we probably shouldn't have done, or that karmically is on the bad side of karma.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're seeing a lot of things going on that are positive right now, and I'm assuming mm-hmm. that it might have some kind of connection to the Pluto retrograde that's going on in Capricorn.
Yes.
We're seeing
yes.
Monsanto getting exposed in a big way, and all sorts of things. You know, the Snowden case coming up
mm-hmm.
where he's exposing all sorts of things.
Yes.
Can we expect more of that?
Yeah, that's just going to continue. And that's going to be up to us to not let that stuff die, because a lot of times what you'll see happen is it comes out, and then we never see what happened with it. You know, we like, oh, good, that's getting exposed, but we never follow it through. And so the key is going to be for us with this and all these water signs is to follow this through, make sure that we keep it out in the focus of the individual person out there so they can be reminded of it and not just say, oh, it got exposed, good. But what if nothing ever happens of it? You know, they just expose it and everybody moves on. And that's what I think is trying to happen here. And it's going to be up to us to just keep the focus on it. So shows like yours are tremendous in getting out, you know, the events that really matter. We just got to keep them out there and keep reminding people that this thing isn't over. We got to keep dealing with them. We got to get rid of these guys, you know.
Well, you know, and that's a good point, and we greatly appreciate the videos that you crank out. You know, I share them, obviously, every time you put one out, I put it on N5D Alternative News, and I want this information to go out to as many people as possible. We know that when Pluto last did the retrograde, as you mentioned, it started, I believe, in 1760, but we didn't actually have the American Revolution until 1776.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there's revolutions going on everywhere. In Egypt, millions of people are protesting right now. Do you see something inevitably that will happen here in the United States?
That's a no-doubter. It is going to happen. And I'm trying to keep from how severe it's going to be from what I see. But the fact is that the awakenings occurred, and as people start to see how what's going on and how bad it is and how evil it is and what the intentions were behind it and the control that's there. They're looking at this from that soul perspective, which is this is not good for evolution, and we've got to stop this. And so, yes, that is going to happen. And I don't think we can avoid that, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we
wipe out
The controllers that are in place now, we've got to make sure that happens this time.
We got to learn from our mistakes, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that doesn't mean it just means the people that are in control need to not be in control. We've got to fix that.
Yeah, peaceful noncompliance, I always say.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, it's well known that the powers that be use astrological alignments to their advantage. Are there any potential upcoming dates or alignments that might trigger a false flag operation?
Yeah, I think we're looking at one that that first full moon in Aquarius. We're going to be looking at one there on the 22nd of July. And then what I always want to remind people is whenever the sun changes signs, look at what goes on, because a lot of small hidden events occur that are, they end up being huge issues later, but they get, like a bill gets signed, or, you know, all of a sudden coverage doesn't happen in Egypt and it started on a certain, you know, when the sun changed from whether it be Aries to Taurus or from Pisces to Aries or whatever. So start paying attention to that time when the sun goes to a new sign, transits to a new sign. A lot of stuff happens that may seem minor, but it sets the bill, you know, or the law gets put into effect, or, and that changes what we deal with. So you go back and you go, oh, nothing happened. But if you go back and look at the bills that were signed and the agreements that were made quietly, and, you know, you're going to see that all the major events happened because of what happened when the sun changed signs. And then even more importantly, watch when we hit a new season, whether it be we go from winter to spring, spring to summer, summer to fall, fall to winter. Huge events occur because those are the angular points on one's chart, and that's when the season changes. So you go from, like, you know, wrapping something up to starting new, or you go from that phase of becoming something new to, all right, now what am I going to be, or how am I going to be, or you go from that phase of who or how am I going to be to, let me test this on others, and then you say, all right, now I'm going to show it to everybody. So in those critical moments of the season changes, watch around then too, because a lot goes on, more than anybody would believe. And that's something, Greg, that maybe you guys could look at and start posting, because I think people will be surprised, and I can get you a lot of information on that. But you do such a good job of getting so much out there, but that may be effective too. Just show when the, you know, when the sun changes and the seasons change, so much goes on behind the scenes that it's just crazy. Mm-hmm. It makes your head spin.
Yeah, if you can get me that information, to show astrologically,
right,
how this stuff is already lining up, what we can expect, and how they've already used this against us, the more,
yeah,
we put it out there, the less likely it is to happen against us.
And see, that's one of the things we have to battle then, is once we put it out, they may pull it back then, because they're like,
mm-hmm,
oh, man, they're, you know. And but that's
they're
what we want.
Us.
I mean, what's that?
Yeah. They're,
yeah,
on to us, they're going to,
yeah,
say. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And listen,
uh-huh,
Pluto went into Capricorn in 2009. When did we have the last market crash? It was in 2008. You know, we had the big scandal.
Yeah.
And so they knew that. They knew what was coming. They caused this. You know, they want us to be – they want to bring this thing to a head. You know, but they want to manufacture it. They want to be in control of it. And if we can astrologically get in front of them, then we can combat this thing without having to be violent. I truly believe that.
I do too. Got a couple more questions for you before,
okay,
we let you go. What is a solar return birth chart? I know what one,
okay,
is, because I've had one done several times, and I absolutely,
sure,
believe in this. But what is the solar return birth chart, and why is it important for people to know about this?
I love the solar return birth charts because it sets you kind of energetically for that year now you're getting ready to experience. And so it's every year when the sun comes back to its position that it was in when you were born. So it's natal position from your perspective. And it just reminds you or prepares you for the year to come energetically, and kind of it's a good time to set the objectives for that year. So I don't care if you're 100 or if you're, you know, 20, if you, each year you take the time, pull that solar return chart, see where the planets are, see where, you know, you are at this time, and truly just look at who you are and what you are. You can set that year and objectives on that date. And then that can get you kind of on a path for that year. And if you do that each year, I wrote some times in there for you as well, Greg, that to then if you set that agenda, so to speak, the 2 months after your birthday, 4 months after your birthday, 8 months after your birthday, and 10 months after your birthday will be wonderful times to, like, advance that agenda or implement something as the sun's in an element that's similar or that's going to work with you, and it'll be tremendously beneficial for you to take and advance what it is you want to do that year. So huge opportunities can happen if you just take that time around your birthday just to assess who you are, where you are, and then where you want to go this year. And then take those 2, 4, 8, and 10 months and really focus that you're going to drive what it is you want to do that year in that period. And you'll find that it's amazing the progress that can happen.
Yeah, it absolutely fascinates me. And every time I've had one done, it hits the nail right on the head. And it shows you exactly what you're going to be expecting and what's going to come into your life. It gives you the opportunity to put forward intentions to perhaps even prevent certain things. Yeah, I totally believe it. It's a great thing to have.
And it's you're in that solar rhythm then. You know, you're in the rhythm of the sun, and that's what we want to be.
Oh, definitely. Last question, follow up on a really positive note. Are there any specific upcoming alignments that will work in the best interests of humanity?
Yeah, I do think that that both those full moons in Aquarius, because Aquarius, the sign, is about the masses, and it's about finding the truth and seeking the truth. So I talked maybe done the detriment side of the full moons, but let's look at the other side, the light side or the positive side, in that Aquarius and Uranus just try to it's the energy that we just try to find the truth from our own perspective. So if you can take those full moons on the 22nd and the of July and the 20th of August, take those full moons, take action on something or something that you believe or an energy that you feel or that you or something that you think can happen, and put it towards that and start the process. You'll be amazed at how it unfolds as you then venture through life throughout the few months and then actually throughout the years of how much of the truth that can be revealed and how much of say-so we do have in tomorrow. And if we take both those full moons, and it's a powerful thing to have two full moons and one sign in the year, having those in Aquarius, it's about our hopes, our wishes, our dreams. Put forth the effort during those times, and let's make tomorrow better. And I think if we all take those two full moons, and we all put the effort forth about what we think or what we believe can happen, I think that this thing could really start unfolding the way we need it to, and we can get back to self-empowerment the way it should be.
How exciting. Yeah, yes. That's exciting, Jim. Thank you. We're finally at the end of our show. I can't believe how quickly it went by. Once again, it's such a pleasure having you on with us, Jim, and we'd love to have you back again. Would you like to tell our listeners how to get in touch with you?
Sure. You can come to my videos. I'm on YouTube, of course. It's Panther Jim 1995. And then my website is ypi2012.com, and that's YPIE. It stands for Your Potential is Exponential. I came to that through astrology. And 2012 is a year I felt like we were going to all transform. So that's the website, and you can email me through there. I do forecasts, and I do the energies that we're getting ready to deal with on there. A lot of good information, so you can contact me through there as well because my email's there. And then, of course, you can catch me, and my phone number, too, is you can get to me from the website. So that's how you can contact me. And, Greg, before I go, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate what you do, not only as an individual, but through the website and the work and effort that you put forth, because it is unbelievable. And about anything anyone could need, I think you're dealing in it. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. And just how much of a difference you're making. And if we could all just take your example, I think this world will be a better place tomorrow. So thank you for that. And Kendra, I'm glad you're on with him. Love your energy.
I agree.
You're going to do wonderful. So I appreciate you both, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you,
absolutely.
Jim.
Thank you, too.
It'd be great to bring you back in a couple more months.
Yeah, we'll look at doing that. So I appreciate it. I always look forward to this, too. So I thank you again.
All right. Great. All right. Thanks a lot, Jim. Take care now, brother.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so next week, Kendra and I are going to be welcoming back Jordan Maxwell to N5D Radio. So be sure to tune in next Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, and midnight in the UK. On behalf of my co-host, Kendra, this is Greg from N5D.com. Namaste, everyone.
Bye-bye.